Rossi surely will fight back on the brakes. Marquez is brave and hangs it in on the outside. And Marquez is back!
There you go, old man. That's what I'm all about. And Marquez back up in the second place. Rossi fights back. It's the older generation against the new generation. Rossi again alongside him.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 358 for Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2013. My name's Martin Darlington. I am in North Wales, and with me across in California is Jim Race. How are you doing, Jim?
I'm doing excellent, Martin. And since it's nearly 10 p.m. your time, I'm going to take a liberty and... All right.
And because I'm working tomorrow and I've got quite an early start, I've got nothing.
Hopefully a glass of water or something.
Which segues beautifully into the fact that the only interview we've got this week is called with someone called Nada.
Mm-hmm. I believe he's Spanish, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Spanish rider who doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, quite diminutive. Is the but what we do have, and this is just a massive shout out to all of the listeners out there, because we started a fundraising campaign to try and get our fundage together for this year and this season with both World Superbike and, of course, MotoGP, which we're heading off to next week, the Austin round. And I have to say that you listeners out there really stepped up. And this is a extensive list of folks that have donated, I believe, since the last show. If I missed anybody, please feel free to send me an email at race@motopodcast.com, and I'll make sure that I get your name in next week, because there are a bunch of names. Martin, I'm going to do half of these, and you do the other half.
Okie dokie.
All right, we're going to run through them. Chris Maitza, Michael Mulder, Michael Williamson, Nick Codling, Richard Glover, Nicholas Applington, Sam Dixon, and these are names that I love it, because these are people that have donated to the show before as well
and emailed. So,
there's
a lot of friends of the show, eh?
Absolutely. Gavin Halls, Dave DeHetra, Neil Roberts, Chris Haar, Clive Whedon, Luathan Azrat, and I was kind of dreading it. I hope I got that one right, sir. I hope you're sir. Larry Hankins, Jacob McAlpine, Brian Hanks, Scott Anderson, Don Henry, Jeff Barber, Scott Anderson, Don Henry, and you carry on, sir.
Okay, we got Scott Anderson and Don Henry twice there, bless them, and Jeff Barber twice. Bengt Brakstad, Blue Bearings. Now, Blue Bearings, unfortunately, we haven't tracked down your real name from the email you sent, Jim, so apologies for that. But Blue Bearings, you know who you are, and your donation is greatly appreciated. Brian Shear, Big John Hart, friend of the show.
who sent Jules and I an email earlier today letting us know where he thought the meetup should occur, which is where the meetup will actually occur. And we'll talk to that later about that later in the show for Austin.
Brilliant. Bryn Morris, Andy Pilbeam, and Andy emailed me. And Andy last year was a new listener. And he had sent a very complimentary email to us, and he'd newly discovered bike racing, bike riding, and moto podcasts, or Motopod. So that was great to see that. Thank you, Andy. Doug Logston, Michael Didonato, Sven Loffel, and Paul Laver. And guys, you know, as Jim's been saying for a while, if all our regular listeners just gave a small amount each, and it really, if all you can afford is a dollar, you can send a dollar. You know, I don't think that we don't have costs on processing, do we? It's just you don't donate a dollar or $3 or $5, whatever you can afford. It really, really is welcome. Please don't feel, you know, as you have heard over the years, we never say we'd like to thank this person because they sent us this much or that person. You'll get a shout out, and it really does keep the whole machine rolling.
Not to mention, we will remember you finally when we meet up with you at a circuit,
yeah,
and pat you on the back, and perhaps buy you a beverage, or unless of course you'd like to buy us one.
Yeah.
It was very cool. We will be setting up at some point soon, to make this easier for folks out there, because I know we've got a lot of emails requesting it. which is simply to set up a subscription system where you can automatically have $1, $2, whatever you feel like you'd like to donate to the show on a monthly basis, recurring basis. And we are working behind the scenes quite diligently to make sure that that is not just something you get, but you will probably get some, not probably, you're going to end up with some extra content, get some of Jules' amazing photographs that he takes, and we can send you some very, very cool stuff. Those are going to be digital, by the way. We really can't mail out right now a ton of actual photos, but you'll get some incredible stuff that he's taken currently through the race weekends, for example, as well as over the years. Probably some unknown content, some of the stuff that was a little bit behind the scenes, perhaps some of the goofier shit that Mark Miller and I have done over the years. Oh, and trust me, there is some. Believe it or not, you guys don't get everything that Mark and I do, because there are times where I go, man, I don't know if I can put that out there. And then Mark and I just laugh about it. And more. So, and probably some early release stuff as well. So the subscription system will definitely have a bonus for those people that are interested. But again, if you would like to donate, and we'll talk about this at the end of the show as well, on the motopodcast.com page, in the left-hand column, about halfway down, there is a donate button. And feel free to use that. If that doesn't work for you, you don't use that that type of process, feel free to write to us or write to me at race@motopodcast.com, and I can give you an alternate method to help the show out. So anyway, donators, one and all, thank you. And it was funny, Mark, because I filled that out about 3 hours ago, yep, that list, and we had a couple more come in right after that. So I had to add on to it. So.
And I do think it's worth reassuring all the listeners that we are not on a slow, sneaky way of trying to make this a, you know, pay-as-you-listen podcast. Yep. The main podcast will remain free because that's the way it's always been and that's the way it's going to stay. It's absolutely just, you know, our costs are going up and we've been credit crunched as much as everybody else.
Yeah. The bonus is if we can get a subscription plan going like this, Martin, is that – and we can get folks donating on a regular basis, is we can actually expand our coverage. So instead of talking about the races from afar, we can actually get there and interview people in person, because we're at this point where people are starting to recognizing us around the paddock, be it World Superbike or MotoGP. And when that happens, it makes your access to the riders and teams a lot easier. As an example, when I have been reaching out over the last couple of weeks, because I started early, to arrange for interviews at Austin for the show, it was just much easier this year because people are starting to know us. And the more the time that we spend in the paddock, the easier those interviews will get, the more in depth and the more time will be allowed. And it just makes for a better show for you guys out there. So that's our story. We're sticking to it. I screwed up last week, Martin, didn't I?
Just a little bit.
It was still funny.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And I'm amazed we haven't been swamped with emails from nerdy listeners. So it might just be me. But
I think, was it just you that told us that?
I think, if people have written in, they might have written in just to you, because I don't think it's come through on the Motopod.
I didn't get a thing.
Yeah, it's just me then. That last week, Jim introduced the episode 357 as the Dirty Harry episode, or the Clint Eastwood episode. And of course, as I was very quick to point out, Clint Eastwood used a 44 Magnum in the Dirty Harry films. Well, Harry Callahan did, not a 357 Magnum. So, sorry, I am such a geek.
That being said, Martin, it means that in 87 shows, I can reuse it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Funny.
But as a former skillet arms instructor, it's these things are important to me.
Well, it's funny because I grew up shooting and ladies and gentlemen out there, you guys probably never knew this, both my parents were cops. So I always would go shooting with them. I mean, it was just something the family did. As I grew up later, I don't give a hoot about guns. There's not something that's important to me, but it's funny because I grew up around them. And you'd think I know that because my stepfather had several 357 Magnums. Mom had a 38, a little nickel plated, like 3-inch barrel 38 she would carry in her purse, because that's back what as detectives used to do. They would have little holsters in their purses.
Yeah.
Female detectives.
Those little revolvers with like a 2-inch barrel. And you think, how could you get anything more than 5 feet away with that?
I think it was more the bang for the noise, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and nickel plated too. I mean, that's stealthy.
Wow. Yeah. The patent leather look.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's get into this stuff. We did have a little bit of news, and we're going to talk about more and more stuff. But obviously, Martin, the big news of the weekend is MotoGP. But let's do a little prelude here, and then we'll launch into that.
Sure. I'd just like to. This is just a shout out to a longtime listener and Twitter mate of mine, Andrew Mantle, who's based down in South Wales. He sent me a tweet saying, "I bet you a tenner to Wales Air Ambulance that Bradle will beat Marquez." I was like, yeah. Now at the time, I actually thought I had Bradle in my fantasy road race teams. So I was thinking, I don't really want to bet against him. And I thought, oh no, I changed it to Marquez. So I said, yeah, okay. Well, obviously, as we'll discuss shortly, Marquez beat Bradle. And bless him, Andrew, straight to WalesAirAmbulance.com, bunged his tenner in the pot, even emailing proof. So, Andrew, thanks ever so much. Can I just point out, though, however generous it is, I'd rather lots of listeners didn't suddenly jump on Andrew's bandwagon. It was his idea first, and it's an exclusive deal between me and him because I can't afford to lose the amount of bets I'd undoubtedly lose. But hats off to Andrew. Thank you very much, sir.
I had a gentleman's bet, which I lost. But there were points where it looked promising as the weekend was going on, that Cal was going to beat Rossi.
Mm.
Well, that didn't quite work out either. And I guess we're not really giving anything away, because if you're listening to the show,
you know what happened.
Odds are pretty much 99% that you guys actually watched the races already.
Yeah.
And if you're listening to the show and you haven't watched the races, we should warn you, this is going to be a pretty massive spoiler. So
this is going to be a Porsche 911 size spoiler. This is a whale tail of a spoiler.
What is interesting, Martin, is right now as you and I talk,
yeah,
I believe that the Moto 2 and Moto 3 races were just broadcast here in the States.
Really?
Those don't happen until Tuesday. Today is Tuesday. It's the middle of the day, but the show obviously is targeted for Wednesdays, as we always say.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, and there are actually some Brits over here, or at least one Brit that I know of in Houston, that is over here for work, and had to fly over before the races went off on Sunday. And so he was asking about, and I told him when it was going to be broadcast, and he said he was going to have to work during the day. He's like, oh, bollocks. So I don't know if you picked it up, you know, trying to get it on the BBC player using some nefarious means or whatever.
Mm.
But it was interesting for the race, Martin. Here in California, every morning, things were kicking off at around 8 a.m. for us. And so that was awesome. Jules and I both had the opportunity to watch pretty much everything.
Mm.
I didn't miss a session. And so including the newly named FP4, which I still think is kind of weird, but it makes sense. Did we talk about the new qualifying last week? Because if not, I'd like to address that just a little bit so people understand what's going on.
Well, I've put a bit in the notes. So do you want to do okay. Moto 3 and Moto 2, and then we can do the MotoGP QP explanation as when we get to it?
That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds good. But one thing I do want to point out before we get into this, because it is very important as to what happened during the weekend, is is that there was construction going on outside the circuit, and it has been going on for the last couple of weeks. And unfortunately, that construction has been going on relatively upwind of the circuit.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of dust and dirt and sand has been drifting over the circuit for the last few weeks. Now, in the past, at Qatar, we've usually had testing prior to the first race going on.
Yep.
And so they had an idea as to what the circuit was going to be like. Well, that wasn't the case this year. And with activity going on, which was halted, curtailed prior to the race weekend going on, but there was still a lot of stuff that was there, and it continued basically until Sunday race time to create at least a visual hazard on the circuit. I don't know if it actually was affecting grip so much, because we didn't have a lot of fallers.
It had to offline. I mean, some of those guys going offline, it looked like they'd blown a water pump and there was steam cut because there was that much dust being thrown up by them.
But I still saw guys offline heeled way over and not falling. It's different than the offline that you get, Martin, with the marbles from worn race tires that you get out there.
Yeah.
And I think I really don't think it caused a huge amount of adhesion problems. If there's any teams out there that are listening to this and want to tell me different, please feel free to write in and tell me. But visually, and from a standpoint of not seeing a lot of crashes and guys not getting super squirrely out there. I mean, we had plenty of runoffs. We know that. We had guys that were running off into the very ample runoff that's available at Qatar. But it didn't seem like it was that big of a deal. It was just from a visual standpoint, it would have been extremely disconcerting. I think Nicky Hayden was the one who said, this was worse than going off-roading with some of my pals. I ended up with a bunch of sand in my mouth. So,
yeah.
I really don't know how much it actually affected traction. It didn't seem like it was that much.
No. But the other problem we had on the first couple of days was wind.
Mm-hmm.
And especially Moto3 class, obviously, suffering. And they were saying that the new FTRs have got – was it the FTRs or the KTMs? Oh, God, I've gone blank now. Have got a new fairing, which is big. There's a lot of frontage on those fairings, which they said is great going down a straight and clearing a hole. But when you get crosswinds, and they were getting a bit of a pasting.
I thought it was interesting because in the past we've seen very typically with the MotoGP bikes that you'd see guys out there with a bunch of holes drilled in their fairings to keep the side winds from blowing them about. And we see that at PI all the time. And I didn't see a single hold up fairing the whole weekend.
No.
Yeah.
Strange. The other thing that was noticeable from QP, I'm looking at the QP results, but certainly when we got to qualifying, which has remained the same for Moto3 and Moto2, they get their 45 minutes of qualifying after three free practice sessions, was the KTMs very much dominant, and the Mahindras, who I believe from what Julian Ryan and Toby Moody were saying, they've gone to Suter. And the engine has been produced between Mahindra and Suter. There's got a Mahindra stamp on it, but it sounds to me a little bit like Derby and Gileri used to do with Aprilia.
Just like we talked about last time we talked.
Exactly. But, you know, Oliveira and Vasquez certainly doing a decent job, both comfortably in the top 10 there. Poor old Danny Webb's now on a Suter Honda. There's only two Suter Hondas out there, him and his teammate Brad Binder. And they had a mixed weekend. But we had Luis Salon, Maverick Vinales and Alex Rins on pole, on the front row. Jonas Folger, Miguel Oliveira and Alan Tetcher on the TSR Honda. Alan Tetcher, they were the second row with Cornfile Vasquez and Alex Marquez, more of whom later, on row three and so on and so forth downwards. I don't know if it's right to point it out, but Anna Carrasco, who's Maverick Vinales' teammate, she was in 23rd on a grid.
I believe that was the highest pole for a woman since a long time ago.
Yeah. Nine guys behind her, including Tony Finsterbusch, a name that Jim likes.
Oh, you do too. You love saying that.
Finsterbusch is brilliant.
That actually got me to pop onto Twitter and say and
block you. But interestingly, unlike how we've seen in the past with this incredibly tight class, I mean, the top four were within a second of each other, but fifth place, Oliveira, was 1.1 out. You know, it did seem, for some reason, the field was quite spread out.
I think part of that is a result of not doing testing. I mean, that also harkens back, Martin, if you think about it, to the lack of dry weather testing we had in preseason for all three classes. Most of the testing seemed to be hampered by nasty weather in the off season. And so it was difficult for teams to really try and dial things in. And then, of course, with no Qatar testing this year, people were having to dial things in on the fly. And that's always difficult because, as we saw when the race arrived, things tightened up quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely. The race itself, and we had this weird situation with Moto3, Moto4, because of the rejigged MotoGP qualifying system. Their warm-up was on Saturday evening. They did the warm-up on Saturday evening. Then on the Sunday, we had MotoGP warm-up, then the Moto3 race, then the Moto2 race. So their warm-up was like 24 hours beforehand, which is a bit strange.
But if you think about it, it makes sense. Because the warm-up is basically just to dial your bike in.
Mm-hmm.
If they were to do it the day of the race, they would be running so early in the day that those settings wouldn't necessarily apply to the conditions they were going to have when they were racing.
Exactly. It just seemed strange until I thought about it. Yeah. And realized, exactly. The conditions at the same time the day before, because they do have, I mean, we did have a little bit of rain on Thursday and the Friday. And it was like, oh, not again.
Yeah.
3 or 4 days rain a year. And it's twice now. It's managed to land on a GP weekend.
I mean, that being said, it wasn't the rain like we had in 2009 when it was basically the guys in the pits were building an ark.
Yeah.
And in fact, there were guys that would be out there running and pull in and look at the ground and realize that it because the temperatures were still quite high. I mean, it was 83 Fahrenheit, ambient 89 degree track temperature. And when you're just got, you know, when it's just dripping down, drizzling down, as soon as that stuff hits the track, it basically dries. And so it's not as disadvantageous, or either that or it's absorbed by whatever sand happens to be on the surface.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, the one other thing that we didn't see was crashes because of the rain, which we will typically see at a European track when it's cold. So it's just the weird thing about Qatar. You know, the weather conditions are unlike any other circuit that they race at. They can't race too late because the track gets dewy then. You know, it's like, all right, a little bit nuts there, and a little bit hard for some of the teams, and especially the newer riders, to use their best judgment on, especially when the last time they've raced there has been a year ago or never.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So
the race itself, it was a fairly typical Moto3 race. We had a group of, it broke down in the end to 5 who pulled away together. We had Salom Vinales, Rins Marquez, that's Alex Marquez, and Jonas Folger. And it was the classic, that 3/4 mile straight. If you started that straight first, chances were you're going to end up 5th by the end of it, as this slipstreaming peloton would just chop and change and chop and change. And again, I mean, we've seen this so many times before on the circuits, the longer circuits, particularly those with longer straights, you get your little battles forming. You know, we had Kai Rithin, Oliveira and Arthur Sissis. Then you had a group of Nicky Ayo, Efren Vasquez. It won't surprise anybody I'm reading out the results here. So this is the order you're getting them in. Danny Webb and Brad Binder, who were absolutely, they were like Cal Crutchlow and Dovi last year on the Tech to our bikes. You know, they were just nailed together for the whole way round. Then we had another group of 4. Then we had another group of 6 or 7. You know, we lost Nicolo Antonelli really early. Alan Tetcher went down. Isaac Vinales, the cousin of Maverick. And John McPhee, quite near the end, unfortunately, we lost him, which was all very unfortunate. But like you say, Jim, there weren't that many DNFs.
No, I think one of the things that kind of everybody resolves to do is and realizes that you're not going to win the championship on the first race of the season. And so Qatar is, as I said, unusual enough in its configuration and weather conditions that people, I think, are wisely a little bit cautious because in the past, Qatar has dismantled the ambitions of some riders' seasons early on at the beginning of the year. And if you get hurt here, you might as well, you know.
Yeah.
Hang it up or not
well,
hang it
look
up.
Look at the logistics. If you were to need hospital treatment, you're trying to get yourself repaired for 2 weeks' time. Well, that race in 2 weeks' time is the other side of the world.
Sure.
You know, you're going to Texas. Plus, you're leaving here with no points. And right. And as everyone keeps saying, you know, you can't win a championship in the first race, but you can certainly dent your hopes of being able to win it. And Luis Salom, I mean, tough kid. As they entered that last lap, I think Alex Marquez was leading and was looking very strong. Folger was probably the one who was struggling to get his Kalex KTM close to the four KTMs at the front. Sure. But Salom played it beautifully. He actually managed to get, he was nearly half a second clear. Vinales and Rins was a photo finish as Alex Rins popped out and tried to just power past Vinales. I mean, that's a real knack, isn't it? Where that finishing line's quite a way down. It's how long do I stay in the slipstream before I commit to the overtake? I'm not sure it would have been possible, however he'd done it, but he just fell short, 0.004 of a second. And Alex Marquez just behind him with Folger following up.
Well, and there's no doubt that the Moto3 class is the class that benefits the most from slipstreaming. And as we saw as the weekend went on, or as the race day went on, that goes down as you move up through Moto2 and certainly MotoGP, with not only disparity in horsepower, but rider sizes and aerodynamics. And that was it. I mean, Nick and Gavin were having kittens over what was going to happen with that top five. And so it was fun to watch. It was a great first race of the year. And it certainly set the stage from an excitement standpoint of what we were going to get to enjoy for the next two races. Big fun. No champagne on the podium, of course. It is Qatar.
Well, half the Moto3 riders are too young anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think they a couple of the Moto2 ones might be.
Yeah. Prosecco or something, didn't they? It's sort of, yeah, non-alcoholic champagne.
I thought it was funny. They actually had, because I think Frisianet is the champagne sponsor for MotoGP, and they had a very stylized Frisianet logo that didn't actually say Frisianet. It just kind of, you could tell
implied.
It was. Yes, it implied, much like the stripes that the Marlboro Ducatis had on them for a few years. You know, it's funny, Martin, I was going back through some photos from, I don't know if it was 2008, 2009 of photos from Qatar. I was looking for something in particular. And the Ducatis then had the full Marlboro logo on the side of the bike. And so
that recently.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
They didn't run it, obviously, in the European countries such as France and wherever that don't allow it. And then you remember they went to the white bars, which people still recognized. And now they're just at, they're pure orange, but they still have obviously Marlboro sponsorship.
Well, they had the barcode for a while, didn't they? Same as the Ferraris had it. And everyone was sort of like, oh, if you read that, it says Marlboro. And actually turns out, no, it doesn't. It doesn't say anything, but
you know, what's funny is I always intended to at the track when I was in pit lane and the Ducatis were out there to scan that damn thing. And I never did.
No.
You know, I bet you I can go back through the pictures and scan it and see where it actually goes. It would be funny if it went to some secret little place.
Oh, I'd love if it just, no, if it interpreted and said something like, oh, you thought you were so clever, didn't you? Or well, this isn't what you think it is.
Or if it just went to Marlboro.com.
Yeah. Yeah, all that. Or it just went, do you remember the old Marlboro adverts? You know, it just went to a picture of a cowboy smoking a cigarette on a horse.
You know what's funny is when I was, it's completely a side story, but these are the kind of tales that we tell when things pop into our heads.
Yes.
When I was 19, I was actually leaving California to move to Micronesia for about a year. And I met this girl just before I left. In fact, at my going away party, I'd known her before, but my going away party, we became intertwined, shall I say.
Yes. I think we get the picture.
Yes. And I was still there for like a week and we dated a lot and completely screwed up my packing schedule. But, went off to Hawaii for a week and was there while my stepfather was taking care of some business. So I was stuck in Hawaii for a week. I was bored. So I called her up and said, why don't you come to Hawaii? She did. She came over for the week. But her father was one of the Marlboro men.
Really?
Yes.
In the adverts?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she had photos and stuff like that.
Now then, she'd have been dead chuffed. Now, you'd be ashamed, wouldn't you? Oh, I'm so sorry if he caused anybody to start smoking, because we're such apologists now.
Yes, we are all politically correct. Oh, yes, this is clearly a very politically correct show.
Absolutely. With the health and safety representatives like Mark Miller we have on. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, it was the funniest thing that I saw that somebody posted. He said he can't be a racer. He smokes cigarettes and drinks beer. And then Mark had the best repost. He said, Joey did.
Yeah.
I'm like, touche.
Exactly. So, Moto 2 and QP was rather dramatic. Very early on, we had Messrs. Moody and Ryder having kittens going, not having kittens at first. They were like, there's a Pons down. There's a Pons Calex gone down. And we all presumed it's Axel Pons, because he does have a habit of chucking it at the scenery quite a lot. And then they squealed saying, it's Pole. And Polish Bugger had crashed. The bike was rideable, and he dirt tracked it an awful long way to get back onto the track and get it back to the pits. Meanwhile, Takaki Nakagami was doing a cracking job. Scott Redding was doing a cracking job. Agata, Mick Accaglio came up sort of in the last sort of third of the qualifying. Julian Simon, Nico Tirol was doing well. And it was like, geez, this is really going to set the cat amongst the pigeons. Nakagami looked like he had his first ever pole position in the bag. And pole comes out. And I think he managed an out lap and two flying laps. Then that was it. He ran out of time and he got pole.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, you know, wow. It really did lay down a marker. I mean, he always grins like a Cheshire cat anyway, but he was grinning like two Cheshire cats. Really delighted. Alex was in his pit, you know, pumping the air and everything. And it was great to see. And it really, I think it was quite a marker thrown down to the others. Interesting in the qualifying, Johan Zarco on his Suter didn't have a great time. He was 15th. Tony Elias on the Calex down in 20th. And the two Tech Trois bikes, Louis Rossi in 22nd, Danny Ken in 26th. Both rookies, both moved up from 2023. But that Mistral chassis, that they are so suffering from being the only two out there. I don't know if Tech Trois have offered them up for sale to or lease to other people, but they must be wishing some people had taken them on. So we went to the race, and it was the Pol and Scott show, Pol Espargaró and Scott Redding, and as a lot of the commentators have said. This year, if anyone hasn't noticed, there is now a combined rider bike weight limit. And some of the smallest riders, for example, Mick Accaglio is carrying, I think, 8 kilograms of weight. Scott's still over because he can't go any lighter than he is, but it's less of a disadvantage. But it was interesting. Pol Espargaró wasn't pulling away from him hugely noticeably.
He wasn't pulling away hugely noticeably, but it was very difficult for Scott to get a run on him on the straight. So he had to do all his work, especially it was basically in the first half of the twisty bits of the circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fast right-handers, he was noticeably closing right up.
Yep.
But then, he'd lose it on the last half straight with the kink and then the home straight. And then have to get it back again. He did get past a few times, but I think he pushed so hard, he had not nearly kicked out of the saddle, but he had a nasty moment on during the last lap and just left a little bit too much of a gap. And in the end, I think during that lap, he realized you know, the only way to catch him is make a desperate lunge, which will probably end up with me in the dirt. So he ended up being beaten by nearly a second, but it was really entertaining up front. Takaki Nakagami got up the podium, looked absolutely delighted, but in a very lonely third place. He was 12 seconds behind pole, but 6 seconds ahead of Dominic Agatou, who was fourth, in a right punch-up. I mean, this was Moto2 Axe Murders, wasn't it? We had Agata Callio, Simon Corsi, De Angelis Rabat, Simeon, Jordi Torres, Zarco Schrotter, and Tirol, all within, finished within 3.5 seconds of each other.
Yep, that was fun. That was big fun.
Unfortunately, because there was a battle going on up front, we didn't see as much of it as would have been nice. Tony Elias rounded out the points in 15th, leading in another dust-up group of him, D'Amelio, Cortese, Danny Kent, Randy Krumanak, and Sergio Gadea. And unfortunately, Axel Pons did crash.
Yep. Let me point out that I was experimenting this weekend with the new multi-screen functionality on MotoGP.com.
Yep.
Because you can choose your camera. And I did notice during a bunch of the practices that they would have cameras on various groups. So unfortunately for me, and it sounded like a fair amount of other people, that particular method of viewing the videos live is not quite there yet. The concept is great, but the technology is still a little bit, they're working out the kinks, I guess is what I want to say.
Yeah.
And so the cool thing about it is, the wise thing about it is they've still left the capability of watching it with the old player, which is just one view, but it works flawlessly and you know, has a great picture and doesn't seem to skip or do any of that thing. So I highly praise the folks at MotoGP.com for doing that and providing us with a backup option until that gets all worked out. It is clear because when you're watching the multi-screen thing, you're actually drawing a ton of bandwidth. A lot of bandwidth. You need a fast internet connection because you're essentially watching, when it's live, 3 to 4 streams at the same time. And you can switch between them, but that is a ton of bandwidth.
Ouch.
And yes. If you've got a fast connection, I heard from some people that have very fast connections that it was working great for them. If you don't have a lightning fast connection, then the old school player that we've been using for years seems to work a bit better. Because I saw complaints from people that, you know, this wasn't working or that wasn't working. And just be aware that there is an alternative for you if you are a subscriber to switch back to the tried and true as opposed to the new flashy stuff. So that's my public service announcement. I'm sure that MotoGP.com folks will get it ironed out at some point, and everything will be hunky-dory. So there you go. Just a word to the wise.
Excellent. Thank you. on behalf of viewers all over the world. Yeah, I think it might be. Is it a costed upgrade to get the multi-screen? Because nope. It may be because I have very limited bandwidth, because all I got was – I got all the, you know, multi-screen icons at the top, but they just remain grayed out. It may be that – because I was watching it – in fact, no, sorry, that was during the FPs when I was at work watching it. So
I actually remember during the FPs I saw when I was first trying it out, because I sent in a lengthy bug report to my guy at Dorna as to what I thought my issues were. I remember seeing during FPs, because I started with it, at least one additional camera that was running at the same time. But my bandwidth here can occasionally be a bit dodgy because there are two women in the house.
And you're in the mountains.
Well, there's also two women in the house that ignore me when I say, can you hold off on using the net while I'm trying to do this?
Yeah.
They'll nod and say yes, and then, you know, the thing will come to a crawl. I'll walk out, and they're, one of them is watching a YouTube video. So, oh, you mean that uses the network? Yeah. these are the vagaries in life that we have to deal with. That's why, Martin, it's so important for us to make sure that we can actually get to the races.
Absolutely.
All right. So Moto2, it was awesome. I had a great time. I really enjoyed it. And again, it was a great buildup too. And frankly, some of the teams that were at the top there, you know, Takaki Nakagami being that close, when was the last time we had a Japanese rider on the podium? It's been a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, Redding and Kallioa up there, Ian Wheeler's probably quite happy.
I think we're probably looking at Hiroshi Ayama, 250cc, 2010.
Yep. Probably been about 3 years.
Yeah.
Yep. And speaking of which, it's nice to have him back in MotoGP.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps it's time to talk about that.
Yeah. Well, we did have this new format. We had FP1 to FP3, which were your standard free practice sessions. However, the times, any times achieved in those three sessions, went into a consolidated timesheet. And the top 10 times, and that's the fastest time you manage out of any of those, would go straight to QP2, which would be a second 15-minute qualifying session for the top 10 riders. The remain, and I see how they've done this now, the remainder, in this case 14, if we get injuries or dropouts, it may go down. If we get wildcards, it may go up. However, remaining many riders are remaining, go into QP1, which precedes QP2, and is also a 15-minute session. The top two riders from that go straight back out 10 minutes later into QP1, and they get a chance to fight for pole position. The interesting thing in this instance is those top two riders, because bear in mind, we've got 12 factory / satellite prototype bikes on the grid. The top two you would expect to be two of those factory bikes or satellite bikes. In this case, Andrea Iannone and Ben Spies on the Pramac Ducatis. And it wasn't. It was Aleth Espargaró on his ART CRT bike, and Andrea Iannone got in. Ben, I mean, let's not forget, Ben's still got a major problem with his shoulder, which had surgery in January, and apparently just keeps collapsing on him under braking. It's not a pain issue, it's a function issue. So, you know, it's not quite as embarrassing as it may appear, but Aleth Espargaró's done a cracking job and was right up front and got himself into QP2.
The only weird thing about that is because now that we have FP4, which is essentially kind of a warm up for the qualifying sessions, if you think about it, because the points don't count, or the times don't count out of that.
I think that's the reason. It's a chance for them to look at a setup where they can look at race setup. They're not having to chase a single lap time.
Well, either that, Martin, or for the guys that are running in QP1, the chance to get the bike set up for the softest tires that are available to try and get those last two spots. But the thing about it is it does create a rather frenetic atmosphere, because you're doing a half hour of FP4, which, as we said, is untimed. Then you go into QP1 if you're in not in the top 10. You run that, and then if you happen to make the top two, and the time between these is minimal. It's minutes. And then if you make it into QP2, you have to turn around and do it all over again. Not only is that probably pretty stressful on the teams and the riders, but I'm guessing that it's probably not too good on the engines. And with the, because you do have that downtime, and with the reduced amount of engines that we have this year for the teams, I'm wondering if that's fully thought out at this point.
Now, I'm trying to remember, wasn't FP4, what came after FP4, wasn't it Moto3 and Moto2 qualifying?
Nope, it was QP1.
Right, wow, yeah, that is pretty intense. And certainly, I mean, I was thinking Aleth Espargaró and Ian Oney might have come in from QP1 and gone, yay, we've got three. Oh, God, I've got to go back out there again. Damn. Yeah. but QP2 was another entertaining one. I mean, we had this last year, didn't we? Some of the qualifying was as exciting as the racing. Now, that probably doesn't say much about some of last year's racing, although everyone seems to be dissing last couple of years' racing. I'm thinking, no, we did have some pretty damn good races. It's just they tended to be at the beginning of the year. So by the end of the year, it was a bit...
Yeah. Hmm. Depends. The one thing that I think is good about the new qualifying structure is you and I both well know, Martin, that in qualifying in the past, which was an hour, nothing really interesting happened until the last 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was when things hotted up. Now with the FP4 occurring right before the qualifying practices, that is their warm-up. And then they basically come back in, make the last second changes and send them out. And it makes QP1 and QP2 both very exciting because they don't have a lot of time to fuck around. I mean, that's the bottom line. So they go out there and they hit it. And so, you know, when you're watching those, that what you're going to see is the best action from the weekend and not basically have to wait 45 minutes before things really kick in. The one difference that's going to occur with this is in the past with an hour of qualifying, if the weather was a bit dodgy, you might do your qualifying in the first 20 minutes and then the rain comes, or the middle part, or at the very end when things dry out. We'll have to see what happens when the weather becomes a factor.
Yeah. I mean, Gavin Emmett was making a point as well. He said, you know, he was thinking, right, they're probably going to go out, get straight out there, get one in the bank. You know, it's an outlap, a close to race pace or close to QP race lap. Another really fast one, come in, change the tire for the softest one you can get and go back out and do it again. And we pretty much saw that, but it was almost like the old World Superbike Super Poles, wasn't it? It's just everyone was going out together. It was like, go out, bang, bang, right, come back in.
Yep. The worry is if you crash.
Yeah, absolutely. If you
crash, much like Super Pole, if you break, you've got no opportunity to get back in and get more laps. Mm. But that being said, if you're set, let's say you go into QP2 and you have an incident, you're guaranteed a 12th starting spot.
Yeah.
Right? So.
But that's fourth row, and it's tough coming from the fourth row. It's fairly tough coming from the third row.
It all depends upon what your name is.
Exactly. hence my mention of the third row. Because we finished. I mean, it did look for quite a bit of it that Cal, who had been blisteringly quick in the FPs and had topped a couple of the sessions, was going to do it again. And he got pipped by Jorge Lorenzo right at the end of the sesh. So we had Lorenzo, Crutchlow and Danny having not struggled so much, but he hadn't really been right at the pointy end throughout any of the FPs. Suddenly found himself on the front row in third place. And probably the surprise of the session was Andrea Dovizioso putting that Ducati fourth. He must have been, well, you could see he was over the moon. Bradl was fifth. Marc Marquez was sixth. Valentino Rossi, seventh. Alvaro Bautista, eighth. Brandy Smith, ninth. Then we had Ian Oney, Hayden, and Alistair Spargrove bringing up the back of the front row. And, of course, Ben Spies just behind them and the rest of the CRTs behind him. So I think the questions beforehand was they were looking at how quickly can Marquez and Rossi make their way to the front, and can they? And how long can Dovi keep that Ducati up the sharp end? And the answer was quite quickly and not very long, respectively. And the start, I mean, when did we last see Lorenzo and Pedrosa on the front row together? And Pedrosa wasn't the first person to the first corner, but he got out-dragged.
Well, remember, Pedrosa wasn't actually... Oh, I guess, yeah, he was on the front.
Yeah,
front
I row. Mean, he was third. So,
well, he was on the inside, which was the dirty part of the track.
Mm-hmm.
Although we didn't see a lot of dust kicked up because the prior two races had managed to clean the track up pretty well. And one of the reasons for that, Martin, was because I think that a lot of the guys were using the inside of the straight to try and break that slipstreaming effect. So you saw guys basically weaving about, trying to, you know, basically shake their pursuers.
Yeah.
And for some people that seemed to work, but that was certainly the case both in Moto 3 and Moto 2, where the drafting is a much more important effect than we ever saw in the MotoGP race.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We had Lorenzo got away in front. We then had Pedrosa followed by Marquez, very closely attended by Cal Crutchlow. And those three formed their own mini peloton. And then we had Stefan Bradl leading a bunch of riders. We had Dovi, Nicky Hayden was in amongst those guys, Rossi, Bautista. And it was interesting because Cal had been interviewed by, or spoken to, certainly by, again, I think it was Moody and Ryder, and had said, if the Yamaha gets a bit of clear track, we can leave them behind because we're faster in the through the corners. If we get stuck behind them, we've got a problem, he said, because we have to back off in the corner when we can't overtake, well, we'll run into the back of them, and then we lack the drive that they have into the next bit of straight. And you saw that happen, and it was very, it was a very well-judged comment, which won't be any comfort to Cal, because he just, every time he'd set Danny up, and then they'd get to a bit of a straight, and Danny, we could just pull away from him. Sorry, not Danny, Marquez initially. And, mm-hmm. and he was getting pretty keen to get past. What I found interesting watching it was Danny's Honda quite quickly started to look like Stoner's Ducati used to, but he didn't look as comfortable on it as Stoner did. He was quite out of shape. Now, whether that meant he was riding at 100% to hold Marquez behind him and try and catch Lorenzo, I don't know. But when you did get the odd shot of Jorge, it was, he just looked really smooth. Marquez looked really smooth. Cal looked really smooth.
Well, I don't know. I would have to say that Marquez's style is still quite reminiscent of a Moto2 style, because he's more than willing and it seems like highly entertained by backing the thing into the corner sliding the front and or the rear or both simultaneously. He's got a very entertaining style that is kind of refreshing to see in the class.
Yeah. In turn, it's worth noting early doors, I think it was lap one, it may have been lap two, Rossi made a pass on Andrea Dovizioso, but nearly ran into, it must have been first lap, nearly ran into Danny Pedrosa and had to stand the bike up and went quite wide in avoiding.
That was seriously close.
Yeah. That must have been, heart in the mouth moment. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of people got past. So having started from seventh, he then had that, and then took ages. And again, we had this issue that Cal had forecast where the Yamaha was struggling to get past the Honda, even though, give him a clear track, it would be quick around a lap. Eventually,
right. And the Honda that he had to get past, surprisingly enough, after all those riders passed him, was Bradl. Mm. Bradl gave him fits.
Yeah, absolutely. And eventually he did get past. And Stefan, trying to follow him, washed the front out and actually, unfortunately, crashed out and had some rather unkind things to say about the front end feel afterwards. But that may have been in the heat of the moment. And at that point, Rossi got the hammer down and Cal was still being held up by the two Repsol Hondas. Rossi caught him, and I haven't heard this talked about, but going past him, and they were quite a way apart, weren't they? Cal was on mm-hmm. the racing line on the left of the long home straight, front straight. Rossi was coming, like you say, quite a way across to the inside. And Cal just seemed to forget to brake. It's like he was...
Well, I can tell you exactly what happened if you watch it again. He tried to do a decent amount of his braking on the rumble strips.
Yeah.
And clearly the traction there is not as good as it is on the rest of the tarmac. And so he just wasn't able to tuck it down to a reasonable speed in time.
Yeah, I couldn't understand why he went across onto the rumble strip when Rossi was so far away from him. Is he just trying to use the maximum width of the racetrack? Or
I believe so.
Yeah.
When Rossi, yeah, I mean, the fastest line is going to be using the most amount of the racetrack.
Mm.
It's also the most vulnerable line,
yeah.
Especially if you've got a satellite Yamaha that probably isn't quite there with the factory one.
Well, effectively, it's last year's bike. Cal's been saying we've had no new parts.
Well, it's last year's bike with this year's know-how.
Yeah.
So and who knows what's there. I mean, the riders don't always get told everything anyway. There's no doubt that Cal had a brilliant weekend and it bodes well. And I'm really looking forward to see what those guys can do, but, carry on, because I digress and we're only on lap 4.
Yeah. So Rossi got past Cal and then set about Marquez and Pedrosa. Marquez got past Pedrosa and now let me get this right. Did Marquez get past Pedrosa, then Rossi got past Marquez, or was it vice versa?
I believe Marquez got in front
of Pedrosa.
Yeah.
And Danny kind of, once Rossi had got past him, kind of dropped off. And then we did have a fantastic, I mean, it was the old master and the young gun. It was reminiscent of Rossi and Lorenzo when Lorenzo first came up.
I had fun commenting on this online because I remember writing a post at one point. Somebody that wasn't able to watch the race but was enjoying the running commentary said, "Did Rossi get past Marquez?" And I posted, "Yes, he just got past." And then I edited the post. I said, "No, wait, Marquez back in front," with a smiley face. And I re-edited it again, like, I don't know, 30 seconds later, I'm like, nope, Rossi passed again.
Well, I got a tweet from one of the Rossi paid up members of the tattooed Rossi fan club that I know. It was like, that was a masterclass in passing. And similar to yourself, at the point that Rossi went past Marquez, and then as Marquez stuffed it up the inside and got past Rossi, I went, it certainly was by Marquez. Unfortunately, by the time I'd sent it, Rossi got back in front again. But those two had a brilliant tussle. And I mean, Marquez definitely has earned his wings.
The thing I like about it,
yeah,
is, and it was clear to me prior to Marquez getting past Danny that he was being cautious, because the last thing that somebody like Mark Marquez wants to do, and having been censured last year for various aspects of his riding by Dorna, is take his teammate out with some sort of stupid move. So it was some very wise riding. He gave people room. His passes were very clean. I think the most brutal pass of the GP race was Rossi on Debbie.
Well, there's no love lost there, is there? Dovi qualified, he supposedly walked past the Yamaha Yamaha pit, where he had no particular reason to be walking, and just gave a little two finger salute. And I literally mean that. I don't mean he put two fingers up, and that's a very British insult, but he, you know, just a little sort of two fingers to the peak of his cap, had he been wearing one, with a smile. And you think, yeah, so I suspect there's a little bit of needle there.
Well, apparently that needle plunged in the wrong direction, because if you want to talk about having your ducks in a row,
yeah,
that old saying, that's exactly what we ended up with for this race.
Yeah, and I mean, all banter and joking aside, it was fantastic to see Rossi back. And so rejuvenated. I mean, just watching his style, there's that, if you're not a Rossi fan, there's that awful inevitability of, here we go again.
I have to point this out,
mm,
because all of the talk since the race has been about Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
And Rossi came in second.
oh, Jim, you know me. I was the first to point that out. And I'm not going to get into a rant about it. I think it's fantastic Rossi's back. He is probably one of the best three or four riders there have ever been. There is no doubt about it. My issue is with a small but quite vocal section of his self-appointed fan club, the viciousness and the venom that came out, it's not, oh, fantastic, he's back at the front, you know, we're going to have great racing this year. It's step aside, boy, the masters. It's all this, it's like, what are you on? So anyway, interesting article on Superbike Planet, which I've plagiarized mercilessly. But there you go, you've had your credit, Dean, so don't get on to us. Could Rossi, the big question, and we will never know the answer, could Rossi have caught Lorenzo had he not started from seventh, which he did, and had he not been held up by Bradle and nearly crashed into Danny, which he was, and he did. So it's a bit of, you know, if my Uncle Robert didn't have any bollocks, he might be my Auntie Jane, you know. It's ifs and buts. However,
you know me, I don't deal in ifs.
Exactly.
I don't entertain ifs.
And the big thing we don't know is, how hard was Jorge pushing? Was he pushing at 90%, 100%? You know, we don't know. But Superbike Planet put up a lap chart of Lorenzo Rossi and, for interest, Marquez. And the reason Marquez gets in there, because he actually clocked the fastest lap of the entire race on lap three. Now, the point they made was that Rossi was the only rider who clocked in the 55s, in 1 minute 55s, in the second half of the race. And he did. He did one on lap 12 and then three consecutive 14, 15, 16. And you can see where he got the hammer down after.
And then he got one on the last lap.
Oh, yeah, and on the very last lap.
Yeah. A master of his tires.
Absolutely. And people have often said, you know, he is one of the best at riding on worn tires. Lorenzo, we know from the Bridgestone guys, is one of the best at not wearing his tires very much at all anyway. Well, obviously he wears them, but at preserving them. So you've got someone who can wear them out, but is really good on them. And you've got someone else who just doesn't wear them out as much. But then you look at Lorenzo's lap chart. Lap one, obviously, is the starting lap. Then he did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 consecutive 155s. Then slipped just into the 156 on lap 9, did another 155 on lap 10. Then he drops about a third to half a second in lap times. Now, I would suggest, as I believe it was Kevin Schrantz has said, no, he's done a Rainey. He's got out front and he's controlling the race from there. So we will never know. He'll know if he could have gone any faster if he needed to. And Rossi's probably got a good idea because he is an incredibly experienced and wily racer. But we'll never know.
And well, I could always ask him next week.
You certainly could. Yeah. I'm not sure he'll tell you, honestly.
either answer he gives, yes or no, is perfectly fine, because whether or not it's the truth, it's still going to be revealing in some way, depending upon the look on his face.
Absolutely. But yeah. But the one comment that I just cannot accept is having a go at Lorenzo for being boring. It's like, sorry, guys, if no one else can keep up, that's not his fault. What do you want him to do?
I think I didn't find anything about the race boring. In fact, no.
I thought it was a masterclass of leading from the front. And I thought Rossi was a brilliant example of okay, you haven't had a great qualifying, you've had a bad start, and this is how you put it right.
It's one of the best races that I've watched in the last year. And it bodes incredibly well for what could be a really brilliant season.
And last year, we generally only had two at the front. It was either Lorenzo and Stoner, or later on, it was Lorenzo and Pedrosa. Now, potentially, we've got Lorenzo, Rossi, Marquez, Pedrosa, and, if he can keep it there, Crutchlow. I mean, blooming heck.
Yep.
This could be something. Bradle, I don't think, is going to be that far away. Can't see. Well, Alvaro Bautista's riding broken fingers.
Yeah, but I mean, if we have any of the guys in front, any of the fastest guys in front have issues, that's when things really get interesting.
Yeah.
This year, I am not going to call for a CRT on the podium.
Mm-mm.
Well, you know, I take that back, Martin. I think everybody owes me a beer because there was a CRT on the podium every year, every race last year.
Yeah, but only on their little own personal private podium out the back of the garages.
Only in park for me.
And no one's looking at them.
Yes.
So we had Lorenzo came in first. Rossi did hold off Marquez and came second. And they were second and third. And both looked utterly delighted, as did Lorenzo. And the hug, the big back-slapping hug between Rossi and Lorenzo, you know, either they're both really good actors or that looked like genuine, both of them really happy. And both of them were saying, you know, this is great for Yamaha, you know. Rossi's enthusiasm is so infectious. His expression was the same as Marquez's.
Wow.
I'm back, yep. You know, in his case. And wow, I've got here in Marquez's. The one face I really wanted to see and they didn't show was Danny's. Yeah.
they did actually, at least on the Dornan feed.
Right. I didn't.
He looked resigned.
Yeah.
He didn't look upset. And in, I can pull up the post-race press release, but I don't remember anything in there that he was super disparaging. And frankly, coming out of that race with the fourth position points still puts you in a relatively decent spot. I mean, it's not like the seconds and firsts he was getting at the end of last year. You know, I don't think there was anything in this race that that was super surprising as far as where people placed. I think a lot of people were very pleased that Rossi seems to have, quote unquote, the fire in his belly. You guys remember the conversation that I had with Mark Brax from last week about that particular comment that was made by a certain former racer journalist. It kind of ran down. The things that were not good were Brattle and Bradley Smith going out of the race, and Carol Abram being out very early. Brian Staring was out, Danilo Petrucci, which I was really bummed about. And then Colin Edwards, just a few laps from the end.
Have you seen the tweeted photograph of his front sprocket?
His rear sprocket.
Basically broke in half.
Yeah, broke in half.
And he said, I think his tweet was, it kind of hinders your forward momentum when this happens or something like that.
He was actually running in a fairly good position. I think he was in the points at the time, or at least close to it. So we'll have the opportunity to talk with him also at Austin. I've got all the Americans lined up for that race because I want to talk to them not only about the new circuit and what their impressions of it will be or are, but maybe also have a little chat about the whole Kevin Schwantz deal. So we'll have to see how that goes.
What I did like about Cal Crutchlow's comments afterwards, he was really pissed off. And I think that's quite a good sign. He, you know, it could come across as slight petulance, but he was like, well, I'm the best of the rest. And I suppose at the moment, that's all I can expect and hope for. I think what he really meant there was, yeah, I made a mistake. If I hadn't done, I could have been amongst those boys. And I don't think there's any doubt he can. And I think Cal, over the last two or three years, has really been consistently impressing people. And I think he may have, you know, I don't know, Ducati might be thinking, yeah, maybe we should have stuck with it. Because that's come out recently, that he basically went to Hervé Poncharal and said, look, I'm sorry, but I've been offered a factory ride. And Hervé said, no, that's fine. And when he went to sign, they went, no, actually, we've been speaking to someone else, sorry. And he said the BBC did an interview with him, and he said, I had to go back to Hervé cap in hand and say, dude, I need a job.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, and if you look at it now, from a little bit of hindsight, I thought of this then. And I'm like, you're probably better off staying at Tech 3.
Yeah. Although, let's face it, Dovi is doing better than I think most people, including himself, probably expected on the Audi, on the Ducati.
Well, there's qualifying and then there's race finishes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, we had Cal in fifth, Alvaro Bautista in sixth, 4 seconds behind, or 3.5 seconds behind Cal, who had obviously run off, but a comfortable 2 seconds ahead of Dovi and Nicky Hayden, who came in very close together. Then we had Andre Iannone, Fede Loney, Ben Spies, who described it as the best 10th place he's ever got. Yeah. He was just pleased to finish the race, I think. Alice Espargaro was the quickest of the CRTs again, RDP following him up. Then we had Hector Barbera, who's getting on all right on the FTR, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's not doing too bad. Yoni Hernandez, Hiroshi Ayama, Claire De Corti, Michael Laverty, and Lucas Pesek were the last of the was the last finisher in 18th. So Hiroshi Ayama picked up the last point. Yeah, wow, what a start to the season.
Yep, it was a great way to start it, and one of those seasons where you go, okay, we have the opportunity for some intrigue and whatnot. Because frankly, Martin, in the past, it's been hard. Well, and maybe this is still the case, to be honest, because we know that some riders are good around Qatar and some aren't. Some bikes are good around Qatar and some aren't. Some riders and bikes are good around Jerez. Which is Jerez and Austin, because both the Yamaha and the Honda teams, as well as the wildcard CRTs, have had the opportunity to test there. And we know that Marquez is fast there.
Well, he topped every session, didn't he?
Yep.
And Lorenzo said, interesting about Austin, he said, I don't think in the four free practice sessions and the two very brief qualifyings, people are going to have time to learn this properly. So yep. He was saying, we're really glad we had those 2 days there. I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but one way of we know that the riders use of learning a track is to get on the PlayStation. Is it on any? I don't know.
Nope.
No, it's too early, isn't it?
That being said, I would not be surprised if the factory teams that were there, that being Honda and Yamaha, don't share some of their data with their satellite teams.
Yeah.
It would just seem like the right thing to do. Clearly those bikes are in different kit and, you know, concentric swing arm, you know, pivot points and lots of things that are a little bit different, but at least give them a baseline to run from.
Yeah.
And so maybe gearing and things like that. So, you know, some of the just very simple things so that when they get there, they've got something to operate from instead of starting from scratch. And I think that I think that will happen, and I'll poke at people and ask if it did when I'm there as well.
Yeah.
But
it does.
So, yeah.
It does look like it's going to be a circuit which favors the Honda a lot more, because there's a lot of straights into first gear corners. I think Gavin Emmett was saying there's something like, was it 3 or 5 first gear corners? That when they arrived, the riders thought they'd be second gear, actually found out, no, they're first gear.
I thought there was just the one, which was the hairpin down at the far end.
No. Gavin Emmett was definitely saying it was either 3 or 5 that are first gear corners. And that's going to favour the Honda because of the drive. And, you know, as people have been pointing out this weekend, Qatar, because of that long straight, people think, oh, that'll be a power circuit. No, it's not, because of all the fast corners. It suits the Yamaha more, but... Yeah, it's going to be a good one. And talking of great circuits,
mm-hmm.
We've got Aragon this weekend with World Superbike and World Supersport, which have been away so long, PI feels like last season.
I mean, the coolest thing about right now, Martin, is that we're once again in the thick of it. When we've got bang, bang, bang every weekend, one, two, or more races.
I know.
It becomes a bit dizzying in a way, but it really makes it fun. It does make it difficult to get interviews, hence why I've got none this weekend, because a lot of people are still traveling, either traveling to or traveling from somewhere. And the other reason we like to go to the circuits, because when I'm there, they can't get away from me. trying to arrange the conversations on the phone can be very, very tricky from a logistics standpoint.
Yeah.
But Aragon. Jules was there a couple of years ago, got some fantastic pictures, one of which is hanging on my wall right in front of me here in the little Northern California Motopod studio. We do know that, and I got a press release this morning from the Team Australia team, that Checo's still banged up from his crash with Marco Melandri at PI.
Wow.
He hasn't been able to train on a motocross bike or anything like that. Very little actual bicycle riding, which is something he's also used to. He says he's still banged up, but he says he's feeling 100% mental and N% physical, whatever N happens to be at the moment. But he said he'll know, you know, a bunch more once he's done a few laps. I'm pretty sure he's going to race.
Well, he likes that circuit, you know, so hopefully he'll be, if not 100%, well, good enough to at least put, you know, put on a show.
Yeah, last year I think he had a third and a DNF. So I'm not sure how much he likes it, but I'm certain that he would like to get a better finish. It'll be interesting because I, off the top of my head, don't remember how the Aprilias have done here, but after their very dominant PI performance, it will be interesting to see what they do.
And in World Super Sport, worth pointing out, Sam Lowes will be riding with broken hands, which he suffered in a training incident or accident. So he's going to do what he can. But of course, already we got Keenan Sofwoglu laying down his marker and going there, leading the championship. So yeah, should be good. And we also, this coming weekend, have BSB Thruxton to follow up. This weekend just gone, and we were treated here because we actually had some really good racing. I even though it was the Brands Hatch Indy Circuit, which is the one with all the good bits taken out. I mean, it's less than a, it's, you know, they're running sort of 50-second laps, and it was zoom, 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 zoom.
Yeah, 50-second laps if it's damp.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the they were running 45-second laps in qualifying. I mean, it's just insane.
Oh, it was crazy. Race one, we had Shaky Byrne from Alex Lowes, from Josh Brooks. We'll keep this very brief because I know not everyone follows BSB, but if you can find a way to watch it, it is got some great racing. We got some really good lads this year. James Ellison, who was on the Paul Bird CRT last year, was on the Milwaukee Yamaha, and he had a visor malfunction. Similarly to, who was it in...
Jorge.
It was Lorenzo, wasn't it? Yeah, similar sort of thing. Visor popped off, and he, unfortunately, unlike for Jorge, which was in a practice session with James, it happened in race one, and he had to retire. In race
with the fastest lap, mind you.
Yeah, with the fastest lap, because of course in BSB you do qualifying, and that gets you grid position for race one. Race two, the grid position is taken from your fastest lap in race one, which is brilliant. It's a brilliant system. Why World Superbikes haven't introduced it, I don't know, because they do look at BSB. It means if you have a crap qualifying, you can overcome it. And if you have a crap first race, well, you're stuffed.
Well, but on the other hand, you guys have your NASCAR style shootout, which I think is still a little bit silly.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was brought about to avoid the Leon Camier championship year, where Leon just ran away with it and had won it with sort of four races left to go, which became meaningless. The year after it, we'd have actually had a closer competition if they hadn't had the shootout in. But, you know, it is what it is.
Right.
Basically, the top six riders, when we get to the last three meets, break away, and they're the only ones who can go for the title. It sort of keeps it alive, although everyone else who's running at that stage is like, what for?
Yeah.
Race two, James Ellison did keep it upright, had a brilliant tussle with Shaky Byrne at the front for three quarters of the race, with Alex Lowes couldn't quite close the gap to them, but was always in touch. And then Shaky nearly did to James what Carlos Checa did with Marco Melandri, running the back of him. Somehow managed to avoid him, sat it up, went grass tracking, kept it upright, and managed to come home third behind Alex Lowes with a rueful grin. I mean, Shaky's attitude is just fantastic. And interestingly, in the qualifying, he did a stoner. He went out, did three laps, came back in and sat down and just watched everyone else trying to beat his time, which they couldn't. I think that was in Q1 because they do a similar to World Superbike Super Pole, you know, with three different sessions. So right. Great racing, BSB Thruxton this weekend. It's the fastest race course in the BSB calendar in average speed. They just basically don't have to slow down very much at all ever. So that'll be good. Jim, I think we'd got to the outro bits.
I think we do. Just a reminder, folks, if you would like to donate to the show, you can go to www.motopodcast.com, left-hand side of the page, about the middle-hand side, there's a donate button. You can use that, or write to me at race@motopodcast.com if you would like to use an alternate system.
Jim, which is the middle-hand side?
It's the middle hand.
That sounds like
portion,
something you
portion.
That's something you'd find in the Forest of Dean if you're from Britain, in Tasmania if you're Australian. I don't know where you're. Where would you find these sort of slightly deformed inbred type people in America? Sorry.
I'm not going to answer that because then I would get email from Americans.
Yeah.
I'll say it's in the Sierra Nevada where I live, and that way that I can basically call myself that way. So thanks. That would be great if you could help us out as we get prepared to really get after this season with our trips to the various races to bring you stuff. Martin, I'm just going to get this out of the way because I don't want you to gloat. Currently, Mr. Darlington is leading myself and Jules Cisek in the Motopod Fantasy League. If you haven't signed up, there's still time to do so. There will be a time to do so all year, but you're gonna not have the opportunity to necessarily keep up with us unless you already have an account or have had it since the beginning of the season. Martin is at 17th, which is, Martin, well done.
Thank
out
you.
Of around 280 listeners at the moment. Much better start than you for last year. Jules and I are both in the top 75. That's out of 280 people, mind you. So we've still got some hope, especially with Aragon and Truxton coming up this weekend. Maybe we can get things a little bit leveled out. And then finally, we do believe, even though we've never been there before, but through talking with folks that have been there for F1 and folks that kind of know the place or at least understand what the obvious landmarks are, probably the most obvious one at the Austin Circuit of the Americas is the big old honking tower that you cannot miss. It's this big red tower with, I think, white stairs or something like that.
Can I guess that you got the phrase big old tower from Big John Hart?
No, it just came into my head.
Okay.
it's an Americanism even so. John did write to us this afternoon and suggests that as well after we talked to somebody else that had been at the F1. That particular tower, in case you can't see the thing that pokes up highest on the circuit, it's like 200 feet high, is on the inside of turns 15, 16, 17, 18, and 19 complex. That's the last set of turns before they get back onto the straight. So that will be at noon on Saturday. And I believe the Moto 3 qualifying starts at 12:35 or something like that. So that should give us a half hour to chat. So when you get there, whatever day you get there, take a look at the maps and see where it is. You can also, if you have any questions about this, or you want to talk about an alternative time or place, if you can't make it then, you can email us at meetup@motopodcast.com. And we'll see if we can work something out. We may end up having two. I don't know. There's a lot of people that are going to be going there that have never been there before. Probably most of you that are going have never been there before, unless you're F1 fans. And there's not always so much crossover, maybe a few of you. I did hear that Grace O'Neill gave us of the F1 F1 podcast gave us a bunch of pats on the back in the last show for our latest series of shows. So thank you, Grace. We've run into her. Jules and I have it more than a few.
Is it Tom, her co-host?
You know, I haven't listened in a while. I couldn't tell you. I feel bad. Yeah. I should go back and listen at least to hear what they said.
No, they're lovely. They're sports rubbish, but they're fab. Sorry.
Funny. All right. Martin, I think we should close this thing out. We've got ourselves about an hour and a half in the can at this point.
Yep.
It's definitely going to be a quick show this week. We're going to have a bit more next week as we build up to the first race that we're heading to. And obviously, we'll be recounting the Aragon World Superbike race and a little bit of talk about Thruxton, too. I still need to watch the races, Martin, from Brands from this last weekend, and I'll try and get
well,
to that.
Well, I haven't seen the British Supersport race, which apparently was fantastic, with a knife fight at the front between about six riders, won by Alistair Seeley.
By the way, in the Superbike races, good job to PJ Jacobson, newbie to the circuit.
Yep.
As well, actually, I think he only ran the GP circuit last year, not the Indy circuit.
Mm.
I believe he got a 9th and a 12th, so well done and bodes well. I think he's currently 9th in points, and we'll have to see how that goes as the season progresses. Tommy Aquino running in Superstock 1000 also had a good weekend, and I think there's three more Americans running under the Creswell Racing banner. We're a guys. I don't know their names off the top of my head, but they're also running in the BSB championship, but whether that be in 125 or other classes, I don't know off the top of my head. But good luck to them. So that's a shout out for our American lads over there carrying the flag for us over here in the States.
And just very quickly, did you hear about Josh Brooks's comments afterwards? Where he said, it's strange. He said, we do everything we can. The Suzuki's always been known as a fast bike. I just couldn't keep up with those guys. But at least we know we've done everything within the rules. And there's a pause.
I know.
And Tony Carter says to him, should we read more into that? And he said, you can read what you like into it. I just thought.
I heard that was said. Yeah. And then the post commentary on people commenting on his comments was even more amusing. Because I do participate.
I like that though. I like him. I think he's.
I do participate in it.
Go on.
Sorry, that was a good stepping on of both of us. I do participate in a couple of British boards, so yeah. I get some good entertainment value. They're not all the biggest fans of Josh Brooks, especially from back in the day when he did some shenanigans over there.
Yeah, I just think he's matured into a really entertaining commentator and rider. So. Yeah, I liked it. You had to see his expression. If you just read it written down, it will sound really bitter. It was delivered with a shaky burn-esque rueful grin. It was just like, you can read into it whatever you like, mate. I thought, good for you. And if anybody does want to join the Motorsport Fantasy League, of course, if you haven't got a team registered by now, you'll have missed out on the first round of each series he covers. But our pin is 7247. So if you have got a team you want to join, fire it in. But if you're doing really well, as Jules mentioned last week, Jim won't let you in.
Well, it all depends on really well. And frankly, I'm mostly joking on that. It all depends upon where I am. All right, let's kick this thing off, and we look forward to talking to you guys next week. Once again, thank you to everybody that donated. That was amazing. A little bit difficult to keep track of.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a great problem to have. So look forward to talking to you guys next week. Look forward to the races this coming weekend. Any questions or commentary, if you'd like to talk to us, email us at motopod@motopodcast.com, and we will talk to you guys later.
Fantastic. Cheers, Jim. Good night, all.
Good night, Martin.
Do. You don't want to listen to this bit, Jules, because there's nothing going on. Jim's gone to the Kazi. He may still be able to hear me because I think he has his cordless earphones. But at least he hasn't taken his... I think it was... He must have been talking to Mark on his iPad when Mark Miller went to the can. And we heard his flow. It was like, dude, that's just... It's not even information. Too much of something. Funny guy. So, is it always this much fun doing it on your own? I should ask Bob. God, that must have been hard work. Keeping your voice animated when you're just talking to yourself. I'll see if I can manage it. Shh, Jim's coming back. When he gets back, all hide.